Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, folks. How are you doing? I hope this finds you well. Welcome along to another episode of Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman. Thank you so much for your company today, for taking the time to join me. I really appreciate it. I hope you've had a good week since we last spoke. When did we last speak? Monday. What have I done since then? This week's been a nice one, actually. It's kind of the calm before the storm. I think because of Thanksgiving happening in America, it means that things have been a little bit quieter here with regards to the amount of events going on and stuff that I've been hosting. But what it allowed me to do was go and see Radiohead on Tuesday night. And I have to thank previous guest on the show, Lauren Balfe, actually, for sorting me out and inviting me to his box, which was mental. But oh my God, what a gig. I kind of summed it up on an Instagram post. So if you want to know what I thought of the show, then go and head to Edibo, to my Instagram. I kind of poured out my soul on the morning after that show. It was quite astonishing. But listen, I've got another bonus episode for you today. And this is a really special one. I'm really thrilled about being able to bring you this episode, actually, because our guests on Soundtracking are Nick Rowland and Taron Egerton. Now, they join me to discuss Nick's latest film, She Rides Shotgun, which you can watch now on Amazon Prime. To give you a kind of really brief premise of the film, Taron stars as a newly released ex-con marked for death by unrelenting enemies who must protect his estranged 11-year-old daughter at all costs. Now, I don't want to tell you any more about the film for a number of reasons. One being that the experience of how the story unfolds is absolutely kind of captivating, not least because of the relationship between Taron and the phenomenal young actress that plays his daughter. She's a young actress called Anna Sophia Heger, and honestly, it will blow your mind. Her performance, Taron's performance, the relationship, and I just think this was an absolutely brilliant, brilliant film. It's had a really unfortunate journey, to be honest. It was released in the States earlier this year, and then Taron and Nick were under the impression that it was going to have a similar distribution here in the UK. I don't know the ins and outs of what happened, but it didn't hit theatres. I was really kind of perturbed by this because I was devastated for both of them and for the film because I genuinely think it's a fantastic film. And so I managed to get the film into a cinema, thanks to the team at Soho House for that, and show it to an audience and then record an episode of the podcast whilst people were watching the show. And I'm really chuffed about that because I just wanted people to see this film, and I'm really thrilled that I now have them on the podcast to try and encourage you guys to go and dig out the film as well. As I said, it's called She Rides Shotgun. But just before we hear from Nick and Taron, I wanted to play you a little clip from an interview that we have up on our YouTube channel, Soundtrack and Extra, which I will be sharing with you as an extra podcast episode next week. Russell Tovey, Tom Blythe and Carmen Emmy about their film Plain Clothes. This is a really brilliant film and a really important film as well because it highlights a a situation that was really prevalent in the 90s when the film set, but unfortunately still prevalent today. And so films like this are so important to bring that to people's attention. And here's Russell explaining the importance of queer cinema and why it's important, particularly important in the current climate.
A lot of queer cinema or a lot of queer projects that come up, there is an intense tragedy in things.
Yeah.
They always, especially if it's a period piece of this period, 97, we all know what was happening within the queer community then. But this film was so full of hope and it wasn't tragic. And that was really important to me. And I feel like as a young man myself, I would have seen this film and felt inspired and felt hope. And this film is full of hope. And in today's climate, especially, you know, queer cinema is more important than ever, but also these stories that humanize and also find similarities rather than differences between us all. And I think Carmen achieved that beautifully.
The wonderful Russell Tovey from an interview you can watch on our YouTube channel, Soundtrack and Extra, which I'll be sharing next week on the podcast. Now, as with Nick's previous film, Calm with Horses, which also fantastic, She Rides Shotgun is scored by Benjamin Power, a.k.a. Blank Mass. And we'll begin with his cue, A World Without Night. So much to both of you for taking the time to chat to me about this film. It has stayed with me so much for so many reasons. How did the journey start for you both with this project, I guess?
I started here.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
In
the, where's the restaurant? Like one down or something?
I think it started 100 metres that way.
Whoa!
So yeah. we met here.
Were you swimming?
No.
That'd be a power move. Just
we had a Caesar's.
Matching trunks.
Yeah. We had a Caesar salad, didn't we?
We had a Caesar salad because it's like, let's order something that you can eat. You know, it's like, because we're really there to talk about the film. Mm-hmm. So we were sort of like picking at it.
Yeah.
But then all of the staff thought we were unimpressed with the quality of the Caesar salad. So everyone kept coming over being like, are you okay? Like, we'll get you another salad. Would you want something else? Here's some free dessert.
But anyway, off, we just want to chat.
Yeah, exactly.
But they were, you know, very attentive and lovely.
So had the story come to you, Taryn, or what your the script form, or where was it?
I'd been sent the script or a version of the script, and excited because I thought it had a real soul and a beating heart, and I was very moved by it and read it in one sitting. But I was also excited because I'd seen Calm with Horses and loved the film. I was really blown away by the film. And I think for a long time, I've really wanted to do some independent cinema work because it's not something that's really characterized my career so far. I've done more commercial things in the film space, I suppose. And and then we met and we got on well, I think. Yeah. I was convinced that Nick would want somebody older and tougher, but I managed to convince
you're
him.
Tough.
I am tough.
You're tough, but you're not old.
What was your reaction to the script?
Like Taryn, I read it in one sitting, and that's very rare for me because I'm like pretty heavily dyslexic. So I always listen to that as a sign. It's not like, you know, I'm still sort of early in my career, so you know, often you get scripts which are often you get bored pretty quickly, or some.
Yeah.
it's quite rare to find one which just really sort of you connect with and seems to work really well. And I thought there was some sort of mistake, but at the same time, I could see there is some sort of tonal connective tissue with Calm with Horses, my first film. And I guess that's what I was attracted to, is there's this sort of balance of tenderness and heart and tension and brutality. But I guess like my very, very strong instinct when I read it was that Nathan, who's played by Taron, it should be a young father.
Yeah.
You know, there's a version of this story where you cast someone who's a little bit older and should know what being a father is.
Yeah.
And I think there are lines in the script, you know, there's a moment where he gives Polly, his daughter, a choice of like, you can come with me or you can call the police, it's up to you. Mm. And I thought that line could be so manipulative if it's not done sincerely by someone who has no idea what he's doing.
Yeah.
So obviously I went to
I needed someone clueless, and I thought,
yeah, as it's someone who's not a father, and someone who's young and is like,
who does bewildered? Well, who does bewildered? And, I know, yeah.
And what's so clever about it as well is that we're so quick to make judgment on people, and you definitely, you know, in the first kind of 5 minutes, you're like, oh no, and just the way that unfolds. I'm cautious about giving anything away for people listening who haven't seen the film, of kind of how he surprises us as an audience, you know, in terms of with his humanity and his humility and just why he's making the decisions that he is, sort of thing as well. It's so refreshing to see and to have a character who, you know, is three-dimensional, who we sort of see his flaws but they're not kind of, There are things that he learns from, as well as us as we're getting to know him as an audience itself. It's just a brilliant character. I mean, for you as an actor, gave you the opportunity to kind of play lots of characters in one, I imagine.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I certainly felt that what you alluded to the first time you meet him, he's not, you sort of think he's something he's not.
Yeah.
It's fun to play with because he is afraid. He is a specific thing. One of the first things he says to her is, I'm not a monster. And what I was always really drawn to about Nate is that in a movie of this nature, which is, you know, kind of rough convict on the run with his strange daughter, it's not, you know, it's not a story that we're completely unfamiliar with. But what I like about it is that I think he defies archetype by loathing everything he is. You know, he really is filled with self-hatred. And I think for someone like me who came up doing things that are quite knowing and possibly a little, I don't know, a bit arch and more kind of playful, it was fun for me to do something where it's really austere and sober. And there's a guy who takes, you know, my first film was Kingsman, and the fun of that was there was enjoyment in every aspect of it. The whole thing is quite indulgent. And the thing I love about Nate, or Nathan, is that there's no part of the whole story that in terms of what he's required to do to protect his daughter that he enjoys. And it just was something that I couldn't, I really, 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 really wanted to do it. I was terrified they were going to do it without me.
And the truth is, the film wouldn't exist without Taron, and Taron's a producer of the film as well.
Yeah.
And it's not been, in some ways, it came together very quickly. And some, you know, like with my first film, it took 5 years to get the financing together and everything, the script in order and all that sort of stuff. And this, in some ways, this felt like it sort of rose very quickly, especially with the strikes going on and stuff like that. But at the same time, it's been, it's not easy to make a film like this. And it's sort of what I find is a compliment is a lot of people compare it to like a movie from the 90s or the 70s. There's a kind of simplicity to it, which I think is sort of what we were excited by.
This little lady that we see on screen who plays Polly, am I right in thinking she was 10 when she filmed this?
Yeah, she's still 11. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Shot 18 months
How
ago.
Did you she'll find her?
She'll be 12 this winter, but she'll be 12 in October.
Yeah.
How did you find her? She's amazing.
We just, like, we casted a very wide net and saw lots of kids, and it was a real anxiety because, you know, the book by Jordan Harp is amazing, the script's amazing. The first thing is you're just excited that you found a story where you really care about the characters.
Yeah.
But then quickly, you know, especially with this story where there's a lot of stunts and there's a lot of really challenging adult situations that Polly has to sort of experience and go through. How do you find someone with that kind of emotional bravery and kind of resilience and a lot of anxiety, really? Because we only had 25 days to make the film. So that was another factor, is that, you know, she needed to turn up.
Yeah, and
we tried to create as much play as possible within the time that we had, but ultimately we never had much time. You know, we had 25 days, but then we had limited hours because of her age as well.
Yeah.
So we found Anna, try not to spoil things, but her audition scene was a phone call with a detective.
Oh, wow.
And
you next sent me a clip of it.
Is it like that clip of Elliot from E.T. that's online?
I would compare it to
it's
that.
Like
it
that, like kind that. Of like.
Do you know there's really, when really great actors, there's a thing that I've noticed that when you're watching a really great actor, you get a sense of their breath, and their breath stays with you.
Yeah.
Like if you think of Stephen Graham in that first episode of Adolescence, or you think of James Gandolfini as Tony Soprano,
yeah.
you can remember the quality of their breath. And there's something about Anna as a performer, and when I saw that audition scene, the panic she's feeling and the emotion she's experiencing, you can feel it in her breath. Does that make sense?
And
there's just something about how present she is. And I saw this audition clip, and it was pretty much, I mean, it felt like a foregone conclusion, but we did audition lots of other young actors. I auditioned with them over Zoom, but she was,
Did you find that, you know, getting, I've got, my youngest is 12, so, you know, kind of finding that place of trust with a young person that age in an environment that's kind of, you know, making it playful and stuff, but still, like you say, there's a job to do. The chemistry between the two of you is, I mean, it's wonderful, but it's also got to have its own journey. Like, that chemistry can't be the way it is at the end, is it, you know, at the start of the film. That relationship's got to go on its own journey. But we see the development of that relationship and that chemistry, but it's just extraordinary to watch you both on screen together. How did you find that place with her?
I don't know, really. I just tried to bond with her. You know,
maybe your wee sister. You've got a wee sister.
There's a bit of that, I suppose. I don't know. I think she's quite, in a way, she's wise beyond her years.
In
a way that you can kind of catch yourself talking to her on a kind of creative level that's quite mature. Mm. And then all of a sudden she'll do or say something and you'll remember that she really is a tiny little...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean,
and you can work with her in the same way you'd work with any other actor. But then there was one scene where she's riding shotgun and she was like, I've never been allowed to sit in the front seat. And then you're like, oh yeah, because you're 10.
Yeah. I love that Bonnie and Clyde kind of element to it. It's brilliant.
Yeah, we just clicked. You know, the first time I met her, I think I told this story on a talk show, but the first time I met her was over Zoom doing this scene. And Nick, you know, I said to her, I said, look, you know, if you're nervous, don't worry. I get nervous. I get nervous before most things.
Yeah.
It's okay to be nervous. And she said, I am nervous, but I know I'm ready. And it was like, I didn't know if I was impressed or a bit creeped out, or, you know, it was really quite striking. And she finished the scene and she killed it. And I said, Anna, that was really amazing. You were brilliant. And she went, thank you very much. You were very good too. And she was just, you know, that, I don't know. It was just very, very striking, her assuredness and her level of craft. She's got this raw talent, but she also has craft. Her dad's an actor, and
she has a hunger as well. Like, she really cares about it. You know,
yeah.
You sometimes wonder with kids, like, how much are, you know, how much are they wanting to do it? How much are, you know, are they being pushed to do it? But you can tell with Anna, she just, it's like she wants to run towards it.
Yeah.
And she does have this bravery.
Yeah.
You know, she loves the emotional scene so much. She wants to go to 11 time, you know. Yeah. So that's where it becomes about shaping it and controlling it. But she's like, she's ready to go there every time.
Let's talk about music, because you worked with Ben again on the score for this Black Mass, and you know that Come With Horsey score was just, I mean, it was incredible. And again, this is I was saying to you earlier that, you know, when you watch the film, it's hard sometimes when I have to do these conversations, because I almost kind of want to watch the film three times so that I can watch it just to enjoy it, then kind of watch it again to sort of find things, and then third time just to kind of really focus on the music. But what I did was watch the film and then I just listened to the music, and then everything is flung back at you just when you listen to the music, because it's so connected to the emotion, to the characters, to the scenes. Did you have any reference points for him, and what were those early conversations about what you were looking for score for this?
We approached it in a very similar way to Calm With Horses, I guess, on a very basic level. It has the same blend of tenderness and brutality, but then there's a shared kind of melancholy to it as well. But obviously we wanted to sort of separate them, and we didn't want to just sort of approach them in the same way. So this was very much about kind of innocence, and kind of, I guess, a lot of the film is about kind of having innocence taken away from you. So the way we worked this way was on this film was Ben would start with quite sweet things and then start sort of degrading
Ben,
them
sweet things.
Yeah. and he developed a 40 minute suite of just like of different sounds and just little riffs and things like this. And then we just sort of like found our path through, because it's not easy what Ben does, the way he can, his palate can sort of effortlessly just sort of glide between extremes, but in a way that feels very connected and whole. And I love that when you say that the film sort of plays for you again when you're listening to it, because we both love scores that are quite present and quite involved in the storytelling. And I guess for some people, for certain tastes, maybe people feel like it's being told what to think, or sometimes people prefer things to be in the background, but I don't. I love the score to be a very integral part of the performance, and actually it's about sort of understanding what the actors are doing, and it's about really sort of supporting what the actor's doing and allowing us to sort of subjectively feel with them.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Ben does so beautifully.
Instrumentation with him, because there's a couple of moments in it that really remind me of, not the score, but the instrumentation reminds me of The Big Blue, and that kind of almost wave-like sort of kind of, but that sort of the melody kind of almost, I don't know what the instrument is they use in that, but it feels got a kind of really similar quality to that.
Like, we talked a lot about the film as a memory.
Oh, cool.
So we were often talking about what would Polly remember as an adult, and what would...
Amazing.
So, I mean, I can't speak for Ben, but there was that sort of, there is a slight dreaminess to it, I guess. And it sort of, we were trying, you know, in the same way, although there's like a baseline naturalism to it, we wanted it to feel slightly heightened with the colors and the textures and even just the things that we're focusing on at certain times, and maybe not what you'd expect in a more traditional, objective telling of the story. So, yeah, it's sort of, And what's great is that Ben was on so early, so he was writing the music as we were cutting the film.
Oh, wow.
Oh, there's so much I could talk about, but I would spoil it. But, you know, there's the great thing about that is sometimes Ben would make choices you'd never imagine or think of that just work so well, especially towards the end of
yeah.
the film.
Well, because the film has, you know, it's got those kind of really... You know, it's one extreme to the other, and in a sense, in terms of the action pieces and the kind of the chase element to it, but then those kind of really tender moments of discovery of this relationship and this responsibility, and so kind of to be able to kind of navigate that as a, you know, with a score kind of accompanying that is like, it's really kind of beautifully kind of paced, I think, between those things.
I think so, yeah, and we didn't have a lot of time, and we were working over Zoom. Which is like, you know, when we did Calm with Horses, I was in Edinburgh for a week or two, and we really sort of got into it. Whereas this time, you know, I was in LA, he was in Scotland, and different time zones and all that kind yeah. of stuff. I think I was overexcited to be making an American film in New Mexico. So I was like, we've got to use all the rattles and all the, there were a few sort of spaghetti Western passes of the film. And then it's, you know, I think what's great about it is it's like, it's, when you are there and when you have these, you don't need to sort of over egg that stuff.
Yeah.
So we sort of ended up trying to play against it a little bit, but.
I was going to ask, because did you film in Albuquerque, is that right?
We did, yeah.
I was like, how many times did you sing the prefab Sprout song? Like, hot dog, jump in,
my stepdad came out to visit for a weekend, and I certainly got a few renditions of it from him, yeah.
Did you have music on, before we get there, the dance scene?
Yeah.
I have to talk about, yeah. I mean, that's like a kind of, it's like a meditation.
It's incredible.
It's,
it's incredible. I'm not in that scene, so I can say that. I remember when...
Sorry, thanks. Terrible microphone, Tony. Thanks, Nick. There was a point, I think, shortly before filming when Nick... Because Nick wrote that scene that wasn't in the original script that I read. And he brought me... just to ask me what I thought of it. And I thought it was good, but I didn't fully appreciate what it was that he was intending with it. And then, yeah, it's incredible. And then, he showed me it when he showed me the first cut of the film. And I said, I remember I said the moment the credits rolled, I said, it doesn't matter what anybody says to you, do not touch a frame of that because it's so beautiful. And it really is the most extraordinary thing. And that just, you know, it was a wonderful script. But I have to say that I do think that that is a totally original moment from Nick's mind that I really think is probably my favourite moment in the film. And Anna's incredible, but it's just a, you know, the church's music and just the way it's shot. And it's just extraordinary. It really is such a triumph, that moment.
When did you decide you needed that to kind of almost be added to the script?
There was something about, I guess, the original book by Jordan... And I have to stress how much I love the book. Mm. It was almost, it's a bit like Hannah in that she sort of grows into this sort of outlaw warrior. And it's works so well on the page, but there was something about bringing this to life with images and performance pictures and sound where I really wanted to acknowledge the journey she'd been on. You know, the film starts with her as a kid around other kids and it finishes with her around other kids, but I wanted to show that she's changed. So that, yeah. And that, so that felt, it just felt like, when I sort of made quite a big change to the original script and then I knew what the story was about. Mm. And I see it as a hope, I think for me, I see it as a very optimistic ending,
yeah.
But I think, you know, it is open to interpretation.
I feel like she, yeah, it's got hope, is what I kind of, for, you know, it's like what she's been through. Mm. And it kind of like, she could have another chance of being a little girl and, you know, and kind of having her life sort of thing with, you know, when you see, and just that performance from Anna, it's just, how do you get to see the journey in that? You see the whole journey that she's been through in that scene, you know, from the way that she's learning this dance, and to pretend to learn a dance is not an easy thing. You know what I mean? In terms of, so how did you kind of direct that, and what was her, I've got so many questions. What was her prep? How did you decide on that song? You know, how much did you tell her in terms of, because it really feels so natural and real that we're watching her look and learn these moves and find strength and find confidence, and, you know, it's all of that.
I think you just try and make it as simple and as real as possible. It's the sort of third film in a row where a fairly complex performance from a kid has been required for the piece to work. And the first thing with Calm with Horses, I had a long chat with Lenny Abrahamson because he'd just done Room with Jacob.
Yeah.
And he taught, you know, you sort of find your own way with it, but he always talked about, in many ways, you can be quite blunt with a child performer because their imagination is so rich at that moment in time, but also it's about sort of keeping things quite simple and into, you know, bite-sized pieces. And about, you know, with Anna, she's so fearless. I could sort of talk and be part of the performance with her, like almost like being Jiminy Cricket on her shoulder. So like sort of feeding her thoughts that she's having, and she's just so intelligent. And So it would be quite involved a lot of the time. But with this, like the first takes, it was actually the challenge was getting all the other kids around her to, you know, because you have sort of like stock, you know, in the script, you put a couple of lines just to sort of suggest what's happening.
Yeah.
But, you know, really, I just tried to get these kids to teach Anna this dance. And it was very late in the shoot. So we'd sort of been through it all, and we were kind of exhausted. And at that point, we trusted each other so much. And it was actually incredibly simple for me, but only because she's brilliant.
The song, Churches, did you play that on set?
Yeah, we played it. Amazing. It was like goosebumpy. You know, it's when you just know, it's like, oh, we've got an ending. It's a very, like, you can take a sigh of relief. I gave up on time, just like you said you would. There are tiny cracks of light underneath me, and you say I got it wrong. Try hard to uncover them. I have somehow got away with everything. Anything you ever did was strictly by design, but you got it wrong. And I'll go anywhere but there. And you have this belief that you cannot build. I'm super proud of that, and also super proud that we have an Underworld song in the film as well, which is just like on a personal, but Trainspotting is my favourite movie, so just that feels very, very, very cool. And,
yeah. I had a really weird Trainspotting experience a couple of weeks ago. I was at Murrayfield watching Oasis.
Oh, I had, yeah, I saw.
It was amazing. We were like a group of, it was like cast of Shameless. It was like nine of my family. It was amazing. Three generations. And we got, me and my brother went out and we were watching, waiting for Oasis to come on. And they played Underworld, Born Slippy. And who comes and sits in the row in front of us? Irvine Welsh.
No way.
It was the weirdest, like, out of body going, this is weird.
Yeah.
Thing. And he was with his group of mates who were clearly like his old mates from Edinburgh. And I'm like, oh, which one's Begbie? Which one's Sick Boy? Do you know what I mean? Trying to work out. I love that that's the kind of thing for you in terms of, like, you know, as a fan of stuff, of getting to put things in your films, and it means something really important to you.
Yeah, Denver Luna's the track, and it was, they played it live at Secret Garden Party, this festival, and it was like just before I went to America to make the film, and I was with all of my best friends, and it was raining and there were fireworks, and I was just like, I was like, what is this track? And then I was like trying to find it. I was like, I don't know this one, and I could, and it hadn't been released yet. And then so I was so determined to put that in the film. Actually, there's a lost track somewhere. Like, there was, you know, when you shoot a film in 25 days, you inevitably lose some scenes when you don't make your days or whatever. And there was meant to be a scene where a wordless scene where Nate and Polly are driving, sort of cruising through New Mexico, and they listen to a song that reminds Polly of her mum. And we never got to shoot the scene. And that will always be the sort of the lost moment of the film that we never found. So.
Did you have the song though?
We had like,
I was pitching River by Leon Bridges quite hard.
Oh, nice.
And I think it's because it had there's a really haunting bit where a female vocal comes in the last part of it.
Is it Georgia Smith?
I'm not sure, is it?
I don't know. Maybe.
But it's just such a beautiful song. And the lyrics feel appropriate. And
have you liked being a producer on this film?
I've liked it in the sense that it's allowed me to make a pain in the ass of myself when I've needed to. But, I mean, it's been... I know people use the phrase labour of love, but it has been. And I like it in so much as it's given me the ability to kind of lock arms with Nick about, you know, the things that we want to lock arms about. And that's, you know, I really defer to him, and we've got very similar tastes, and our instincts often land in the same place. And I do enjoy, it's been nice to feel that I've been able to help it come into existence. It is one of the things, you know, you shouldn't pick favorites probably with the things that you've been a part of, but it really is up there for me, this film. I feel very emotionally invested in it. At times it's been hard, particularly the experience of making it was really glorious. It was really hard work, but it was really glorious and very creative, and
and the experience of working with Anna as well as Nick. But after the fact, since the movie has been made, as is often the case with independent films, the road to distribution and finding a way to spread the word about the film has been challenging. And it started with we didn't quite make it to the film festival circuit that we'd hoped for, and I was frustrated because I really believe in the quality of it.
Yeah.
And it's been really gratifying, and I suppose it sounds like a slightly ugly word to use, but it's been quite vindicating to see the reviews the film's received, because there's just so much love and craft in the film.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that I really love about it, and the thing I really love about Nick, is a kind of a complete lack of pretentiousness in any way. You know, the film, I think, is extremely, and I'm saying this particularly, you know, about Nick's work, but extremely artistic, but without any kind of pretense or loftiness. It's just a really great story told really, really well, I believe. And so anyway, in answer to have I enjoyed being a producer, it's you know, you're emotionally invested in it all the more, I suppose, and you get a peek behind the curtain, and it's at times a little heartbreaking, but but it's also very gratifying.
But clearly it's a role you've taken seriously, because sometimes you know you hear kind of talent being, you know, a producer in the film, and like, I think I heard,
well, I've been that as well. I've been that version of a producer.
This has been the hard work version. Yeah.
Check my IMDb.
But you can tell, because this means a lot to you.
It does. And my relationship with Nick means a lot to me as well. And, you know, I think if we get it our way, this will be the first of several, I think.
Awesome.
We really do. We've really, you know, formed a lovely friendship, and I care about each other. And I just, you know, I'm an actor. I want to work with great filmmakers, and Nick's a great filmmaker.
Considering what you've achieved already in your career and the variety and range of roles that you've done, both on, you know, on screen and like Smoke's Love, and it's amazing. I mean, and all the stuff you've done on TV as well. But this just feels like another side as well. It's like you've given him, you know, Nick's given you the opportunity to kind of show another side of you. And I don't know whether that's because it's an independent, you know, film or whatever that is, but it just feels like, my God, there's even more there. And it's so wonderful to watch. And you can see how invested you are in the character and telling of the story, and hearing you talk about it as well.
Thanks. I mean, yeah, you know, to at the risk of sounding a bit cynical, I don't get a ton of opportunities to make films with great kind of, you know, independent auteur filmmakers as Nick is, and I was very grateful for him to giving me that, you know, for giving me the shot at playing the role.
It works. Did you think of a playlist for Nathan in terms of the music he'd be into? Did you talk about that?
Because
we don't really get to see or...
No, I mean, I do often do that. In fact, I did do it for Smoke.
He's an interesting character.
He's an interesting character, yeah. He hasn't got good taste in music. Not for Nate, actually. I kind of feel there's something very... There's something profoundly sad about him and self kind of flagellating about him, and I think there's too much catharsis in music, I think, for a character like that. It just didn't feel right. There's a great emptiness in him that is ultimately filled by her, and somehow music feels like the preserve of people who've got a little bit more to live for.
Yeah, it's almost like he can't allow himself to let the music make you feel the way it would make
exactly
you feel.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
And it's probably the first part I've played where I haven't really thought in those terms or had a playlist, because, you know, in the spirit of Westerns, and it is a Western, I suppose, in some ways, I always approached playing him like he's kind of a man marked for death, really, you know, and there's something kind of quite fatalistic about Nate and his journey, and I guess that doesn't really line up with, I don't know, music somehow feels frivolous to the character.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I hope you're talking about what the next project is already, because I'm excited about it, and people should, hopefully we'll get the chance to see this film on the big screen where it deserves to be, because it's absolutely wonderful. Huge congratulations.
Thank you.
And
thank you so much.
Yeah, look forward to the next part.
And thanks, thank you guys. For having
thanks
us.
So
my
much
pleasure.
You.
Thank you.
She Rides Shotgun, that's the title cue, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin' with Nick Rowland and Taron Egerton.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores. Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
My huge thanks to both of them for taking the time to talk to us. She Rides Shotgun is streaming on Amazon Prime now. Please do go and seek it out and let me know what you think about it as well. Everything about this film I think is phenomenal. I think as a whole it's great. Taron's performance is extraordinary. The score from Ben, aka Blank Mass, is brilliant. And Anna Sophia Hegar is a revelation in it. So please do go and check it out. If you'd like to hear my previous chat with Nick and Blank Mass, you can just head to edithbowman.com where you can find every single episode of the podcast. Follow us on your socials at Soundtrackin' UK and please do subscribe to our YouTube channel, Soundtrackin' Extra. We've got so much lovely extra content up there. Next up, okay, who's watched it? The latest season, part one of the latest season of Stranger Things. I watched episode 4 last night. Phenomenal. What an ending to episode 4. So great. Duffer Brothers, oh yeah, join me to discuss the conclusion of Stranger Things. And we'll also share that conversation that you can catch on Soundtrack and Extra with Russell Tovey, Tom and Carmen talking about Plain Clothes. So bumper stuff coming for you on Soundtrack, and I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company there. Thank you.
It's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.